Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here on the sunny Mag Mile in the Allstate Showcase studio. Very beautiful day with the temperatures going to be warming up. And I'm glad Sam played that clip of John calling that HOSA goal. I mean, that, like I said earlier, that was just icing on the cake from our own blue line all the way down. And, yeah, sure, it's an empty netter, but it just magnified how important that win was last night. Sam, tell me if I'm wrong.
I could play it again for you first if you want.
Sure.
Marian HOSA swinging it from the Hawk line into the empty Blues net. It's 6-3 Hawks with 2:20 left on the clock. And the United Center is up for grabs. We're headed to Game 7.
That'll wake you up on
yes.
a Sunday morning.
It, oh, but what a way to wake up.
Absolutely.
And nobody does it better than John and Troy. And, of course, you're making a big mistake if you don't listen to them Monday for Game 7 with the pregame at 7 or
pregame at 7, puck drop probably at 9:40.
9:40.
Did you see what the league said to Pat Foley? They sort of took what he said with a grain of salt because he was complaining that, you know, kids and have to go to school, people have to work the next day because the Thursday game ended after midnight.
Well, I think, frankly, I think everybody's siding with Pat Foley on this one. I mean, you know, you go to a double overtime game on a puck drop that starts at 8:40, and who does it serve? I mean,
the West Coast.
Well, but you have two teams in the Central Time Zone. And yes, I know we're in the Western, quote, Western Division. And maybe we'd rather be in the Eastern Division with back with our original six partners. But that's not the case. And why the Central Time Zone is just getting nailed in this series, I don't know. But at least we won't have to go through that on Game 7.
I would guess puck drop, if I was going to really try and put a guess on it, it would be about 7:48 on Monday night.
Yeah. So, well, that's better than 8:40, which that doesn't, especially on a Monday night. You know, it's what can I say? Well, you know what? We were talking about the Republican contest for president, and you know, on the Democratic side is Dave played that clip from ABC about Bernie Sanders says he's in it, you know, till the end. But Hillary Clinton has been making a lot of campaign appearances in Pennsylvania. Recently, she was in Pittsburgh at Premonti Brothers in Market Square in advance of the Tuesday Pennsylvania primary. I actually remember covering Hillary Clinton in 2008 at Market Square. And my friend David Green, who hosts Morning Edition on National Public Radio, he's a Pittsburgh native. And so he arranged that we all got Premonti Brothers sandwiches. And, yeah, every city's got, like, their unique food, right? But this is like a sandwich that has French fries, like steak-cut French fries on top. And it was just – I couldn't eat it. It was just – I mean – If that's what they call food in Pittsburgh, you know, have at it. But this is Hillary Clinton talking about the Pennsylvania primary.
Well, I'm sure going to work hard because I care deeply about Pennsylvania, and Western Pennsylvania has been a place that has had a kind of mixed story.
And that's Hillary Clinton. Joining me now on the phone is State Senator Matt Murphy, Republican from Palatine and Deputy Republican Leader of the Illinois State Senate. Senator, thank you for getting up and joining me this morning.
My pleasure, Rick. Anytime.
I know it was quite a week in Springfield, and as we were talking with Tony Arnold earlier, perhaps, you know, capping off the week with the passage of that short-term stopgap emergency $600 million rescue plan to try to keep higher education afloat. And the question everybody has is this kind of perhaps a shining light into bigger and better days ahead, or is this just a one-off?
And that is the right question to ask. And, you know, I tend to look at these things with the glasses half full. You know, you saw not just the higher ed bill where all four caucuses and the governor came together. And I think it's important to note everybody came together because, you know, there is following tax day increased revenue coming into the Education Assistance Fund. So we can actually, you know, allocate money. The $600 million is actually there to give the school.
Right. It's real money.
It's real money now. It's not just a show. And so that made it a little bit easier, I think, for everybody to come together. So that was really encouraging that people, you know, when there was an opportunity to provide real money, nobody played politics with this thing in the end anyway. And it got done. The other thing I think that was kind of encouraging that happened around the same time was, you know, the governor – the governor, Senate Democrats, Senate Republicans, all came together on a bill for another $450 million for social services, who are in a very similar situation in a lot of cases, if not worse, frankly, to our higher ed institutions. We were able to pass, you know, that money was identified as well, and we were able to pass, again, it's just a bridge, it's a stopgap. But we were able to pass that on a bipartisan basis out of the Senate, and it's something the governor supports. So we're going to find out when the House comes back. The House isn't in next week, unfortunately, but we're going to find out when the House comes back if Speaker Madigan is in favor of that proposal or not.
Well, and you know, one of the things, and we talk about, you know, crisis helping to drive policy, and the legislature tends to traditionally be a reactive body than a proactive body. And the way I look at it is that when you start looking at things like Chicago State University, but also those universities out in rural parts of the state that are basically the economic lifeline, and it's not just people working at the universities, but it's the universities and buying things from local businesses and the incomes that help of the workers that help drive those rural economies and seeing those in a crisis or threatened mode, that the motivation was there regardless of political ideology.
Right. Well, and I think, yeah, the motivation was there, which was great to see. It was, for us on the Republican side, it was also great to see, you know, that we had the opportunity to put in the money that we actually have. We were able to identify money and only spend what we actually had. But it's enough to bridge these universities till August. Now, hopefully between now and August, there is a broader deal done. My hope is these two issues can serve sort of as trust builders in the Capitol and provide maybe a little bit of momentum to maybe step out and do some things on a more comprehensive basis and see if we can finally strike that grand bargain that I think everybody feels is necessary to put this all behind us and start moving Illinois forward.
We're speaking with State Senator Matt Murphy, Republican from Palatine, the deputy Republican leader of the Illinois Senate. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. I never meant to cause you in the never meant to cause you any pain. I didn't want to one time see you laughing, babe. Only want to see you laughing, yeah, in the purple rain, purple. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin, our little homage to Prince. Joining me on the phone, State Senator Matt Murphy, Republican from Palatine. We're talking about the last week in Springfield and the short-term stopgap emergency funding measure for higher education. And, Senator, I'm glad you brought up that second bill, too, the $441 million that would be allocated from a special fund to try to help these social service providers as we see this kind of safety net for those most vulnerable, you know, just collapsing. And, there is a big question. The Senate passed that 55-0. Senate Republican leader Christine Redonio made a point, and it's a point that I kind of end my story with in today's Tribune about it's really about the revenue. And there is an identified revenue source, but no one should be misled that that stopgap higher ed bill or even this emergency funding for social services is the end-all be-all here.
Well, no, it isn't, because they are stopgaps. They are bridges, hopefully, to a global resolution that the speaker actually can engage in. You know, they're positive signs because the bar has been set so low in Springfield that, you know, there was
that's always the case.
There was compromise. There was agreement. There was everybody putting aside their own personal issues in assessing the problem that had become pretty critical in getting a job done. And so, I'm pleased to see that that's possible. And I think, you know, we're trying to hopefully look at this as optimistic signs of momentum going forward. But yeah, no, I think Leader Redonio used the phrase, let's not break our arms patting ourselves on the back, and I think that's a fair assessment.
Well, one thing that was noteworthy about the higher ed bill and also this pending bill, a bridge bill for social services, there was not the attachment of the turnaround agenda from the governor. Where does that fall? And is that, I mean, is that a sign that that agenda?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, is that a sign that that agenda is maybe moving down as far as a priority of the governor?
No, not at all. I mean, the governor ran to improve our jobs climate and, you know, make this state a lot more economically healthy. And you're not going to do that by continuing to do what we had done the 12 years before he became governor. So that hasn't changed. What you hear all the time about the governor from the Democrats is he won't compromise. He won't compromise. He wants it his way or the highway. Well, if he wanted it his way or the highway, Rick, why weren't there strings attached to these proposals? If he's completely unwilling to compromise, why was he willing to sign these measures without some of the reforms in place? It's because he is willing to compromise. He is open to certain ideas. Why is he not talking about right to work anymore? That was an important initiative to him. The supermajority Democrats in the legislature said, that's utterly anathema to us. We can't do it. The governor took it off the table, but we can't go back to doing what we already tried. Just raising taxes and not changing anything else was tried back in 2011. We saw the largest spike in unemployment of any state in the country in the first calendar year after that was done, and that tax increase didn't solve our problems. We didn't have this huge improvement in job quality and job opportunities here. We didn't pay down our deficit completely as was promised. So there's a lot of work to be done, and you're not going to do it just by raising taxes, which so far is it appears what Speaker Madigan wants to do, just put the 5% back on and keep rolling. And I just don't think that's what the people want.
Well, and I'm going to have State Representative Lou Lang on in the last half hour, and he's sponsoring the bill that would effectively put in tax rates for a graduated income tax if a graduated income tax constitutional amendment were to ever pass and be authorized by the voters. And you know, we all know.
I find Lou much more compelling when he's talking about the Blackhawks.
Well, we'll probably talk about that a little bit too. But
a fine Blackhawks fan he is, but I think he's off base on the graduated income tax.
How so?
Well, look, you know, they're going to sell this thing as a tax on the rich, and the rich are going to finally pay their fair share. And, you know, if you're in that middle class making 50 to 250 somewhere in there, you're already paying over half of the taxes. And you know what? In the history of this country, the middle class has always borne the weight of carrying the taxes because there's the most people in the middle class. When they put an amendment in at the federal level back in 1913, they said, well, it's never going to get above 4%, the federal income tax rate. Now, you all saw where that went. The truth of the matter is, once they take that flat tax out, you watch. If you're in the middle class, they're going to sell you on this being a tax on the rich. But you know, if you're in the middle class from history and experience, in the end, they're coming for your money with this. You know, so they can say what bill they're going to run originally if they get the chance to tax more. But in the end, they're coming for the middle class. And this will, on top of us having some of the highest property taxes, on top of us having some of the highest sales taxes, especially in this area, this is going to put us, I think the Tax Federation ran the numbers on Lou's bill, this would make us 48th again in tax burden. That's not how you get us to an economy where people have the best opportunity possible to get the best job they're capable of doing. That's how you stay down among the worst job growth states in the country rather than growing to be among the best.
For a comprehensive budget agreement, it's going to have to involve spending cuts and new revenue. And if you look at what the governor has talked about as a grand goal for education and changing the school aid formula at some point, and every school district is held harmless, I mean, we're going to be talking about either a lot of revenue or a lot of shifting of revenue, aren't we?
Well, the governor has made clear that he'd be willing to sign the tax increase that the speaker has indicated he wants to push through. And look, we have real challenges because of years of mismanagement in Springfield. I mean, our budget is tied up in things like the pension payment, where, you know, most states' budget is 5 to 7%, or their pension payment's 5 to 7% of their budget. In Illinois, it's over 20%. That's huge money. That right there alone, the difference there is the difference between being able to balance at 3.75 and not. The Affordable Care Act under President Obama ties our hands on Medicaid. Medicaid is the largest line item in our budget. And then, as you said, Rick, K-12, you know, we're 49th in funding K-12 from the state. Now, we're fourth in overall spending, but from the state, we're 49th. So, you know, you've got three things right there that are the vast majority of our money, and it gets tough to go to, you know, we're going to cut prisons, we're going to cut roads, we're going to cut social services. It's going to be a real challenge to make it all work. The governor has said he's willing to compromise on that. But again, the key factor is you've got to put the reforms in place that can bring the cost of doing business down in other areas to make us a little more attractive to job creators, because the stat that haunts me the most is since 2000, the U.S. economy has produced 15 million new jobs. Over that time period, Illinois has lost 100,000 as the fifth largest state in the country. So we've got to change how we're operating if we're going to give people the best chance possible to succeed. And how we go about, you know, just taxing and not reforming anything isn't going to change that dynamic. We've got to fundamentally change the way we're operating in Springfield.
That's State Senator Matt Murphy, Republican from Palatine and Deputy Republican Leader of the Illinois Senate. Thank you so much, Senator, for joining me this morning.
My pleasure, Rick. Let's get a win on Monday.
Absolutely. We'll be back with more right after this.